It was dark, and I was frightened. I had not realized until now quite how ancient was the evil that had been wrapping me in its cloak for so many months. I could not bear to stay in my flat. Remembering my promise to ring my mother every night, I went out to the phone box. She answered straight away and sounded more worried than before. "Your father has another attack today. It's still with him, poor soul. He's in terrible pain. The doctor says he's to be flown ashore as soon as possible. They've reserved a bed for him at the Royal Northern Infirmary in Inverness. I'll be going with him, of course. Do you think you could manage to come up?" I hesitated. "I'll do what I can," I said. "Give me a day or two to clear things here." "He'll not be in that long, Andrew. He's only to stay a couple of days, just for them to run their tests. A scan of some sort, the doctor said he'd have." "They'll find nothing with a scan," I said. "Well, you sound very certain, Andrew. I wish I could be as sure as you. Even Dr. Boyd says he doesn't know what they'll find. Let's say it's an instinct I have." We talked a little longer, and I promised I would ring the following night. When I put down the receiver, I saw that it had grown even darker outside. It was late now, and the pubs were either closing or closed. I had nowhere to go except back to my rooms. I picked up the phone again and asked for directory inquiries. They gave me the number of Harriet's Hotel in St. Andrews. I rang reception and asked to be put through. "Yes, who is it?" "It's me, Andrew. Please don't put down the phone. I have to speak to you. You didn't give me a chance to explain." There was a long pause. "I'm sorry, Andrew," she said at last. "But I thought maybe you... I don't know, that you were sick." "Listen, Harriet," I said. "The book was put there in place of a copy of Desperate Remedies I bought for you in a shop near Toll Cross yesterday afternoon. The bookseller substituted the book you saw for the one I bought. If you're willing to listen to me, I can tell you more about the book and why it was placed there." There was a short pause. "Very well," she said. "I'll come in the morning." "No, tonight, Andrew. Please, Harriet. Tomorrow may be too late. I can't take the risk of falling asleep on my own. He's close, I know he is." "What is it, Andrew? What are you frightened of?" "Milne, don't you see? He's looking for me. He's getting desperate. He needs me to bring back Katrina from the dead. It's what he chose me for, why he trained me, why he revealed so many of his secrets to me. Come tonight, Harriet. It may be too late in the morning." Back at the flat, I locked my door. I took out the two books I had kept back, and I found the passages I needed. I began to construct a series of magical defences against the forces threatening me. Shortly after midnight, my doorbell rang. Harriet had not wasted any time. As I let her in, I saw her look askance at the circles and stars with which I had covered my door and the middle of the floor. "Believe me," I said, "they are necessary." We ate supper and sat in silence for a while. Slowly, a sense of harmony was restored between us. I began to tell Harriet what I knew about the Matrix. When I finished, she sat for a while, deep in thought. "You said you thought Milne wanted to bring Katrina back to life," she said at last. "Yes, I do. That's why he had her body dug up. That's the reason for the objects found in the grave. The dead child. It's all there in the Matrix Identitatis. Why do you suppose he needs you?" "That's in the book as well. The 7th chapter. If the ritual is performed by someone to whom the dead person had a close attachment, someone they want to return to, and who would desire to have them back, there is a much higher chance of success. If Milne could persuade me to perform the necessary rites, Katrina's return would be that bit more certain."
"But Andrew, why does he want her at all?"
"I'm not entirely sure. To question her, I think. She has knowledge that he craves."
"Isn't she back already?" said Harriet.
"You said you smelled her perfume yesterday morning." "That isn't all." I explained what had happened earlier that day in the shop. "It was Katrina," I said. "Only she could have played the violin exactly like that. And it was her voice I heard. But what I felt later, that was not my wife. It was something else using her.
I don't really understand this. It's too complicated for me. I think Milne has been able to bring her back in part, but not all the way. He needs more, much more. But if he gets it wrong... I was desperately tired. Alone, I could not have slept. But knowing that Harriet was in the next room gave me confidence. As soon as she had gone to bed, I switched off the light and fell asleep almost at once. I was woken by a gentle touch on my arm. Andrew? It was Harriet. What is it? I asked. She looked scared.
It's starting, Andrew. I can hear something upstairs. It began a couple of minutes ago.
At first, there was nothing. Just the same stillness in which I had been sleeping. Then I heard it too. Flapping and scraping, and at times the dull thumping of things like feet. Harriet joined me on the couch. We sat side by side, listening as the sounds moved across the floor upstairs and reached the door to the attic. There was the sound of a door opening, then a muffled shuffling on the stairs.
"Can it get in?" asked Harriet.
"I don't know," I said. "It had never approached this close before." We listened as it came down the attic stairs, then came flapping along the landing. It stopped as it reached the door of my flat. There was a long silence. Then something began to move bodily against the door, flapping to and fro like an eyeless, sightless creature that can smell what it's looking for. And then, more horrifying than any of the other sounds, a voice spoke from the other side of the door.
"Andrew, open the door. Please, open the door, Andrew."
I froze. The voice was Katrina's.
"Please, Andrew. It's cold out here. Please let me in."
"What is it?" Harriet asked.
"Who is it?"
"It's Katrina," I said. I stood up. Harriet grabbed my wrist, trying to pull me back to the couch.
"For God's sake, don't go to her, Andrew. It isn't real. She isn't there. Katrina's dead."
I pulled my hand free. "I know she's dead. That's why I have to keep her out." I picked up one of the two books I had used for my defensive spells. I found the verses I wanted, and standing at the door, recited them slowly. The pleading voice changed in seconds. There was a loud scream, then sobbing, then a deeper voice commanding me to open the door. I went on reading, though my voice shook and I felt sick with fear. When I came to the end, I rejoined Harriet on the couch. At the door, something started to scrabble and lick at the wood.
"Let me in, Andrew," came Katrina's voice again.
I did not answer.
Losing patience, she threw herself at the door, howling. Still I did not answer.
It went on like that until dawn. I read and reread the conjuration until I knew it by heart. Harriet and I sat huddled together in that cold room, while my dead wife howled and scrabbled at the door. The next morning, we walked into town. More than anything, we needed fresh air on our faces, the touch of sunshine, a sense of normality. Harriet had to visit her solicitor to sign some papers. It was an old family firm in Bank Street. The partner who dealt with Harriet's affairs was a Mr. Merkiston. He came through the door of the waiting room to greet us.
"Harriet, how nice to see you. How have you been?"
"I'm fine," replied Harriet. She introduced me. "This is a friend of mine, Dr. MacLeod. He was a colleague of Ian's."
"MacLeod," said Mr. Merkiston, taking my hand. "Not Andrew MacLeod, by any chance?"
"Oh, yes, that's right."
"Well, this is a stroke of luck. I've been trying to get hold of you. I sent a letter to you at New College a little while ago, but it mustn't have reached you."
"Not at New College," I said. "I was attached to the university."
"Well, it's a good thing you called in, then. If you'll wait just a moment, I have something for you."
He and Harriet disappeared into the back office. He returned in a couple of minutes, bearing a small envelope.
"Ian gave this to me before he died," he said. "I had instructions to give it to you as soon as you returned from Morocco. If you could just scribble your signature on this form, you can take the packet with you."
He left, and I sat down again, clutching the envelope to me. I decided to wait until Harriet returned. I did not want to read Ian's letter alone. We read it together, half an hour later, in the Acanthus Cafe near Waverley Station. "Dear Andrew," the letter began, "I'm sorry we didn't have longer to talk when we last met. I know a bit more now about the pressures you've been under lately, and I apologize for my clumsy attempt to put you right. All the same, I'm more certain than ever that I was right to warn you against Duncan Milne. I said I'd heard rumors about him, that he had an evil reputation in some quarters, but I didn't know then just how evil that reputation was, or how well merited. The things I heard in the beginning encouraged me to find out more. It wasn't easy. Even in the church, people I asked about him would say a little and then clam up. I got my breakthrough a few days before that last visit to your flat. That was the real reason why I came round, to tell you what I already knew and what I planned to do next. But when Milne turned up, I couldn't risk staying. You may have heard me speak of Angus Brodie, a member of the General Assembly and a good friend of mine. Sometimes he's called in by people who've been troubled by, let's say, evil spirits. He told me that in more serious cases, he was assisted by a friend, a Catholic priest. He was good enough to give me the priest's name, and I made an appointment to see him." The writing broke off here, and when it resumed, was in a different ink and a much altered hand. "Harriet tells me you've gone to Morocco with Milne, and I'm afraid he has you for good now. But I still feel I should write this in the very small hope that it may do good, and because I know I do not have long. I'll be dead before you return, Andrew, I know that. Anyway, I visited the priest 2 days after I saw you, and came away more shaken than I have ever been. His name is Father Silvestri, and he lives alone in a small parish house in Kirstorfin. He was cautious at first, but he agreed to help. Andrew, you must go to Silvestri as soon as you read this. Go without delay. He will tell you everything. Listen to what he says, and follow whatever instructions he may give you. And make sure you get away from Milne, whatever the cost. Silvestri told me things almost beyond belief. He told me all he knew about Milne, and he showed me proof to back it up. Duncan Milne is not what he seems. He is not even human in any real sense of the word. You must believe me, he..." The writing broke off again, and when it resumed, it was clear that Ian's condition had deteriorated markedly in the meantime. "Harriet must not know. So hard to leave her alone. Look after her, Andrew. Silvestri has been, but he can do nothing. We pray, but our prayers are not strong enough against that man." The writing trailed off again. At the very end, Ian had scribbled a few lines, broken and barely legible. "Find the church. Destroy everything. They are swarming. Angus Milne brought them back from Morocco." They were the last words he ever wrote.